You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What is up, Bison fans? And welcome to another two-show week. This being your first show of Bison Report Radio, brought to you by Gateway Chevrolet. And your host of that very show is myself, Ross Uglum, the publisher of Bison Report for 24/7 Sports. Joining me for the first time ever in studio, Valley News Live's own Devin Fry. How you doing, buddy?
Good, Ross. How are you, man? Thanks for letting me in here. I didn't expect us to be vibing right away to the jams like that, but that was nice on the
just
intro
a dead giveaway that you don't listen to the show.
I do. I skipped to the middle part. I skipped to the interviews. They're what I really care about the most.
Yeah, no, we had Thunderstruck. I think that was kind of like the most obvious intro to podcast ever.
Yeah.
And then, Willis and I basically did, and Zach still does plenty of it, but like Willis and I did a season that was basically just us.
Ah.
And that was 2 years ago,
okay.
I want to say.
That sounds then, about right.
And then last year, it was primarily Zach and Quinn doing the bench warmers and me and Trevor doing the main show.
Yep.
But having Zach and kind of like the inner knowledge of the fact that they blast Sweet Lovin' after a win, and then that kind of starting to hit social media that they blast Sweet Lovin' after a win. It's such a great tune to just kind of get
it's
things
a perfect
going.
Victory song.
It is.
Mine in high school was TikTok by Kesha. Fun fact.
My goodness. Yeah, we
as was the style at the time.
After they lost to UND, I'll never forget. After they lost to UND, I just cut the music immediately, and Zach was. He just burst out laughing because he wasn't ready for me to cut the music. But yes, a very victory Monday, and a very victory Monday to all of you with North Dakota State defeating South Dakota in a laugher down in Vermilion. But you're a news guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not the A topic, is it?
No, it hasn't been. There is a playoff run going on, and I remind people of that in my shows every time after I talk about coaching news.
Right.
And
right.
I say, not to be forgotten in all this, we're in the middle of a playoff run right now.
They are in the Final Four yet again. Starting the show off with the news portion, as we always do. Again, Matt Ant's leaving. If you've been living under a rock and somehow this podcast is the first NDSU news you've consumed since Saturday.
Congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Matt Ants is leaving. Coach Ants has taken the assistant head coach position at USC. He will also coach linebackers under, I almost said Lane Kiffin. I almost did, which is just like such
that
a Freudian
hurt my
slip.
Soul.
Yeah, under Lincoln Riley, I would assume, and I think USC's private, is it not?
I believe so.
Yeah,
yes.
So they are under no requirement to divulge, but I would assume it's a significant pay raise, especially, and people, took a position coach job. No, he took an assistant head coach job with a position to coach.
Right, at USC,
right, like, right.
Arguably one of the best brands in college football.
100%.
So, I mean, it's not just a position coach anywhere. He didn't go to Central Michigan, no offense to any Central Michigan fans
out
there.
But right, it's a top five brand in college football. Took an assistant head coach. They're not under any requirement to divulge his salary, but I'm just going to tell you, I would guess at a minimum it doubled. That would be my guess.
Look at the averages between, like, for just assistant coach jobs in the FBS and head coaching jobs in the FCS, right. And you could draw your own conclusions at that.
Now level. The USC obviously part of the Big Ten,
and still and so
that,
weird,
and that, but that does make and he kind of mentioned this in his Monday press conference. That does make him attractive because if USC and of course Oregon now in the Big Ten, UCLA now in the Big Ten, I believe Washington went to the Big Ten.
Yep, Washington.
Right.
Well.
So like your core premier Pac-12 brands. Where did Arizona end up?
Arizona and Arizona State both went to the Big 12 along with Colorado.
So
and
Arizona
Utah.
Went to the Big 12.
Yes.
Okay. I knew ASU was in the Big 12. I did not know Arizona went as well.
And then Cal and Stanford went to the ACC. Which makes all the sense in the world.
Good luck with
because
that.
Because we're in that kind of world right now.
Right.
Where, Atlantic Coast Conference, Cal and Stanford are the first two that come to mind there.
Anyway, that's getting off the side. But like I said, your bones of the Big Ten are still Michigan, Ohio State, Minnesota, Iowa, Wisconsin. That's your bones. I think Matt gives a great insight into how to recruit those areas, knows the high school coaches that you need to know, knows the power brokers that you need to know, and that makes him a tremendous asset, I think, to USC, along with being a good defensive coach.
Right.
And that's what he is.
I think he's got to shine in a linebackers coach role. Just seeing how he interacts with the defensive players. Obviously, his background's defensive coordinator at NDSU.
Yep.
He's going to thrive in the linebacker coaching role. But you mentioned the whole having a footprint there for USC, they're going to have to compete with Ohio State and Michigan and Penn State now in these like areas.
Yes. Yep.
And he has a good foothold right now that he has the contacts. It's something that I didn't think about annoyingly too late after the hire.
Right.
But
right.
It makes total sense.
Some other news and something that sources within the program kind of wanted to bring to my attention, not as an excuse, but as just sort of something that is being understood, and we have tried to raise awareness as best we can about the Green and the Gold Collective, and not necessarily to champion it or to cheerlead for it, but just for people to understand, like, hey, if you don't want to lose guys, if you and you're going to lose guys either way. I mean, NDSU is not going to ever be immune to the portal. Someone will always have a bigger checkbook. It's just life. But to understand another way that NIL is being weaponized, you and I had this conversation right before we went on, which is Kyan Payne is headed to Kansas State. Now, he's a Kansas kid that K-State did not offer. Right. Nothing wrong with that. But their collective, their NIL collective, because he's an in-state kid and because he's been identified by their coaching staff as potentially a viable Wildcat, their collective is going to pay his way. The exact same thing happened with Kyler Girardi and the Swarm Collective down in Iowa City. So right now you have guys, and folks, if you don't think, and it might not be at Bison Report with like our specific list, but there's a number of different places you can find NDSU's commit list.
Yes.
And if you don't think...
I use the Bison Report list.
I appreciate that. You. And if you don't think that these Iowa State, Iowa, Minnesota, that these schools, Kansas State, Kansas, whomever, Nebraska even, are looking at that list as they potentially get, like, if Minnesota's about to lose a four-star linebacker to Michigan State.
Yes, yep.
If you don't think Minnesota now looks at NDSU's list of guys, like, hey, did we have an in-state linebacker go to NDSU because we didn't offer? Like, those hands need to be on deck, and that's a huge part of the collective. But another way that I don't think people thought about, like I said, weaponizing these collectives is having NIL money pay for walk-ons to go to school to boost your walk-on class.
Right.
Yet another hurdle for kind of mid-major recruiting to overcome, and that's where NDSU's at. You talk about a desire to move up. That's fine. I'm definitely moving my own opinion into that category.
Yep.
But until that happens, the number one weapon that NDSU has, besides the fact that they've fully funded all scholarships, besides the fact that they've fully funded cost of attendance, is collective, and is also, people talk about collective, collective, collective. It's also people, businesses in the community being willing to make terrible Comfort King commercials. The collective.
The Comfort King commercials were fine. Anyway, go on.
But my point is, like, yes, the collective, the member, the collective, and we have said all the things I think we need to say about the collective, but Businesses in the community can do the Grant Nelson Nodak insurance commercials. Businesses in the community can do the Cam Miller Comfort King commercials. Right. Like, you can do things besides just donating it to the collective to kind of incentivize these guys to stick around and to support the program. Okay. We've done that discussion. Maxwell Woods, another Bison commit, and he has some deep ties to NDSU. I believe he's related to Kyle Steffes. There's some deep NDSU ties, but another one that they're going to want to keep in the boat if they can. I mean, it's all hands on deck, really, to try and keep this class together for a week, because yes, National Signing Day is 7 days away. He won Mr. Football in Minnesota. Very, very cool. For pro Bison fans, Easton Stick getting his first NFL start on a short week.
Very short.
Shout out to E. This will happen tomorrow.
Did you hear his answer? I think it was today. It might have been last night or today. He said, North Dakota State may not be the NFL, but I'm used to winning. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
And so he also that'll be awesome. Said super nice things about, you know, Philip Rivers and, yep, and Justin Herbert, and just like, hey, I understand what the standard of quarterback play is with the Chargers, right. You know, and they're getting Josh Palmer back, hopefully Keenan Allen healthy. Hopefully. You know, I you know, shout out to Quinn, shout out to Zach. I'd like to keep E upright for, you know, 60 minutes.
That would be nice. It would certainly help his first start here.
So NDSU has been in the national news, and not this time for beating an FBS school or winning yet another FCS championship or having Hunter Lipke leg dab or even having a quarterback drafted in the top three again.
I love how the leg dab got mentioned before quarterback getting drafted in the top three in the NFL.
Well, it's not anything necessarily that they did wrong, mm-hmm. But two stories have hit the barstool level. Two stories have hit the national news, not necessarily like leading sports center,
right?
But like the clickbaity stuff,
very much
has found
the clickbait sites are all over this.
And we spoke a little bit about Ticketgate to Jay Elson. We had Jay Elson of Midco Sports on last week, and of course, you know, Jay's kind of married to the program. I mean, right. He had to be careful about what he said, and we treated that with respect. And I thought Jay did a great job. We had a ton of fun, but that story definitely made the rounds national, you know, and I would guess that some of those national accounts probably updated with, oh, by the way, South Dakota got what was coming to them. Yes. And I'm a little less vitriolic, but like Jay said, it's you and me are in the same boat. It's like, well, we get to go to the game either way,
right?
So
buy all the tickets.
We're right, no longer in search of tickets. I would guess it kind of affects us a little bit less. But North Dakota State won a basketball game.
Did they.
In which they led 60-5 at half and ended up winning the game 108-14.
Yes.
And that drew some national criticism
and attention as well.
Right.
CBS reached out to my weekend guy and asked for footage of that game because they couldn't. It was that unbelievable. We sent CBS, like national big three-letter network.
Yeah.
Highlights of NDSU against Oak Hills Christian, which that was not anything I was prepared for heading into the weekend.
Yeah. And it's, you know, how do you. I don't know. And I will say this, okay? You get your starters in and out. Mm-hmm. Okay, Morgan plays 11 minutes. Javis plays 13 minutes. Jakari plays 14 minutes. Bowden plays 14 minutes. Okay, we're talking about 13 minutes of run for Ryan Sletten.
Right.
Okay, we're talking about getting Sam Hostreiter's legs under him with 21 minutes of run. Fetterson, 15 minutes. DeSette, 16 minutes. JB, 19 minutes. I mean, they did everything that they could to get the bench in the game.
Right. And a lot of people are coming at him for scheduling the game in the first place.
Yeah.
But when it comes down to it, they were kind of in a scramble. The women's basketball team was in the same situation. They ended up having to go play at Iowa State, which isn't necessarily...
would have been a better deal than what happened, but whatever. Yep.
But so they with Western Illinois leaving the Summit League, they had to scramble to find somebody to fill this in. And they found Oak Hills Christian up in Bemidji, Minnesota.
Yeah.
My wife knew about them.
I did not. I had no idea who they were. I didn't know there was a second school. I mean, I've got... former like guys that played golf for me that went to Bemidji State, and I played when we played when I was at Concordia, we played in Bemidji State's tournament. They were D2, we were D3, but we were invited to go up there. So like I know what Bemidji State is. I don't know what Oak Hills Christian is. So anyway, with that said, they are NDSU's in a position. They get a win over Portland.
Yes.
And then I think this is finals week.
Oh, okay. I believe so.
And
it
if
might
it
be.
Is...
I saw T-Mac just graduated today. If that hasn't...
Yeah,
he got his master's or whatever.
May or may not be. Either way, they did not have a game scheduled from December 7th to December 17th.
That's tough.
That's a long
time.
That's
a very long time.
Especially, you're starting to try to get ramped up. You've got your first... you got your first game, conference game on December 29th, and I don't know that you want to have in the middle of a basketball season where everything is about routine, 10 days off.
A 10-day span where you do nothing but practice in the middle of the season like that would have been brutal.
And you want to get another home game, and you want to do a number of things. And look, I get maybe they didn't know. Okay,
yeah.
Maybe they didn't know. Quite the degree to which, because look, NDSU, you know, gave up 72 to Wisconsin Stout.
Right.
Now they scored 101,
but they still gave up 72.
Right. They gave up 66 to Mount Marty. Played St. Olaf in an exhibition with teams not really wanting to come to Fargo, and it's been a beautiful fall/winter so far. But I do understand the difficulty of forcing teams to come up here.
Especially that quickly.
Yep.
Like on that much of a short notice when they just learned that Western Illinois wasn't going to be around this past offseason.
And so, and that's the next point and the final point that you've brought me to, which is that a lot of this had to do with the fact that Western Illinois left the league kind of too late.
Yes.
And certainly too late for these other coaches to be able to scramble to fill games. I know Bison fans probably didn't want another non-D1, but I don't like you can't always just call up Utah Valley State and they'll come. You certainly can't call a MAC school.
No.
Like they're not gonna come without a home and home in place.
Well, we're starting to get to the point where like they're starting conference slates kind of around the country right now.
And
so,
even honestly, Big Sky schools won't come without a return agreement.
Right. That's why they had to set up that whole
challenge.
The Big Sky
challenge, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's just very, very difficult. And you know, it's going to sound like, and maybe we are carrying the water a little bit for NDSU, but they were put in a tough position. Oak Hills agreed to play the game.
You can't see that coming. If you're NDSU,
the other thing too is people said, schedule Morehead. Morehead's a number two team in the country right now.
Yes,
you're trying
exactly.
to schedule, like, I don't think you know. Like, I'm not saying Morehead State would beat NDSU. I am not saying that.
Right.
I'm saying it's a no-win situation. If I'm NDSU, I'm not scheduling.
Exactly.
I'm not scheduling that game.
Well, and Morehead, the NSIC just started their conference stuff a little bit ago. I think they're four games into their conference slate.
Yep.
So, like, they're getting into the nitty-gritty of their season. They can't just drop everything right now. And I know it's a quick trip
to
Fargo, but
I'll say this. And I said it after the game, and Greg Steeman said it after the game. He's the color analyst for WDAYX or whatever it is that they're doing We get it through, or I get it through the Summit League Network, Midcourse Sports Plus, but I know that's not who it is. Greg said, credit to Tim Miles, and you're goddamn right.
Yeah.
Credit to Tim Miles to agree, and NDSU, it's an odd schedule this year, because NDSU
actually has
two in-season home and homes. Now, granted, one of the Montana games, the Montana game at Montana was technically part of a multi-team event.
Right. But
they went out and knew they were going to draw. It wasn't a tournament,
right?
They knew they were going to play Cal Poly or Cal Davis, whichever
Cal
it was.
Yep.
And they knew they were going to play Montana.
Yes.
And they know they're going to get Montana at the Shack. And then they play San Jose State twice.
Yeah, which
in 4 days or 7 days or whatever.
Right,
it was.
Going out to the West Coast and then back home, which is tough for both teams.
Right, and this, but with all that said, this would have been an even skinnier and even thinner and even yuckier, whatever you want to use, without those two San Jose State games. That really gave this schedule some legitimacy, truly. Who knows what else you're scheduling?
I wonder what that Oak Hills Christian game would have looked like now without that San Jose home and home in there. That would have been tough.
So, okay, this episode of Bison Report Radio brought to you once again by the good people at Gateway Chevrolet. Folks, we've said it before, we'll say it again. Four-wheel drive season is coming. All-wheel drive season is coming. Gateway Chevrolet has an excellent inventory of both new and used four-wheel drive and all-wheel drive vehicles. Go check out a Silverado. Go check out a Colorado. Go check out a Tahoe. Go check out a Suburban. Go check out an Equinox. I could keep going. There are multitudes of different Chevys, Cadillacs, and, of course, pre-owned vehicles that can have either you or your kids safe on the road this winter. Check them out at GatewayFargo.com. Just stop on by on the I-29 frontage road. Okay, as much as it seems like a guy could really dive in to a revenge road interconference victory in the quarters, there just isn't that much to say.
No, there really isn't. Because it wasn't that much of a game.
No, and then obviously the game is sort of just erased from memory because of everything that's gone on for the last 3 days.
Right.
So let's get into the game. Cam, and we pay attention to the PFF college grading. Cam was basically graded out as exactly average against Montana State. Like
That sounds right.
Their average is 60.0. Oh. Cam got a 60.4. So they're like this is, if you're not doing anything to help your team or hurt your team, you're a 60, and that's what he was against Montana State, which then we said, not good enough.
Right, no, and that's not what we've seen from him all season long.
Exactly.
So it was more of an outlier.
Highest rated offensive player in FCS football, he was him again.
Yes, yes.
I think he was I was doing the inside the numbers piece, but I think he threw two incompletions. It was either three or two incompletions, and one of them was a throwaway. His adjusted completion percentage was in the upper 80s, and it's just incredible what he's been doing. I mean, even you go back to like Carson and some of the things he was doing and Easton and really trying to hit like that 65% as kind of the golden benchmark for quarterbacks. And look, I get, you know, restricting freedom of movement, all those things where guys can't get hands on receivers and interceptions are down across football.
Right.
Pro football, college, it's all down. It is easier to throw the ball. But what Cam is doing is absolutely ridiculous. Four big time throws as per graded by PFF, and you can kind of go back and see which ones those were. But average depth of target over 12, it's not just that he went 13 of 16 with a throwaway. It's that he went 13 of 16 with a throwaway, and it was all bombs, or most of them were bombs. If your average depth of target is over 12, you're ripping the ball down the field, right. And he was electric.
I can go 13 of 16 if I'm throwing checkdowns or screen passes, but that's not what he was doing. Exactly. Yeah. But no, and it's not just, obviously his passing has been unreal this year, but he's continuing to make plays with his feet. They haven't really shut down that aspect of his game throughout the season, despite how dangerous he's been on the ground. That's still something that he can go back to. I think we've seen him rush for a touchdown in each of the playoff games as well. So his playmaking ability, throwing the ball, like you mentioned, and throwing it deep, and then also being able to make plays with his feet. He's just had a sensational year, and it's getting more and more impressive as the season goes on, which is, it's pretty rare at this level for it to get just more and more impressive throughout the year.
Another guy who just continues to elevate his level of play, doing the inside the numbers piece, should come out about the same time as this podcast was supposed to come out this morning. I'm sorry.
I forgive you.
NDSU has a 5-game winning streak. Mm-hmm. After they went down to Brookings and lost, they have not lost since.
Right.
Here are Eli Green's numbers. 21 targets, 19 catches.
That's crazy. You could stop right there, and that's insane.
He's catching over 90% of the balls thrown his way. His 409, and keep in mind, as was one of the big draft knocks on Christian Watson, as has been, you know, talked about to no end, NDSU ball control offense.
Right.
Keeping all that in mind, Eli's 494 yards over the last 5 weeks is third in Division One and second in the FCS subdivision. So he's almost leading the country in yards playing in NDSU's offensive system. He has 11, 15, or more yard gains. He is averaging 6.64 yards per route run, which was such a banana stat. So that's first in Division One football,
yes.
6.64 yards per route run. He was almost at 13. You want to know how many routes Eli ran to get his 116 yards against USD?
How many?
Nine.
That is insane. That
nine is routes. Nuts. Not nine targets.
Right.
Ran nine routes.
Gosh.
And then went and got some Gatorade. Like, what?
He's been unreal. And it's been so cool to see him. Like how I mentioned, Cam's just stayed level. It's been incredible to see how Eli Green's evolved through the year. And especially to where he's at now. Peaking at the right time does have some merit to it in college football, obviously. But he has been out of his mind at exactly the right time. Every time there's a big play now, I don't have to look at the number. I assume who it is. Oh. And more often than not, I am right.
And Cam has had some F it Eli's down there moments.
Yes, like, very much so.
Even one that got called back at Montana State, he had an F it Eli's down there somewhere moment.
Yep.
His 93.4 receiving grade is number one in all of Division One football, not just FCS. The last 5 weeks, the highest graded. And keep in mind, just so people understand the process, I go over this over again. It's neutral. They're not associated with the team. They're just trained in the way the PFF does things.
Right.
They watch each player individually every snap that they're on the field, and then a second person does that. So it's two unbiased, unaffiliated, whatever people that watch a game. And, okay, did you do your job? Okay, did you do your job well? Did you do your job extraordinarily well?
Right.
And then those are kind of put on a spreadsheet. It's real nerd stuff.
Love nerd
stuff. It's a little bit subjective, but again, it's consistency, play in, play out. Are you making a difference? And in college football, at the receiver position over the last month, month and a half, he's been the guy. And I can't say enough nice things about what Eli's doing right now.
And you mentioned it's every snap. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like it's just the big plays that they're analyzing
right.
that he does well.
Yes.
He's consistently doing what he's supposed to do throughout the game. A massive factor in his team's wins every single game at this point in the year.
Another guy who's a PFF darling and a darling of ours, Cole Wisniewski. All credit to me. I'm going to give myself credit.
Right.
I said, and I don't have the time, I was going to lay over what I said over one of his picks and put it out there. And I run out of time. Damn you, Matt Entz, for ruining my week. But I said Cole was going to get a pick. He got two. And one of them was a tip ball, obviously, but he just played so well. And really that's the point that you and I came up with going into this, which is the dogs on this team, the guys that are all America level
yep.
players. They're the ones that did the doing.
Yes, yes.
the dogs barked. I mean,
right.
the dudes killed it in this game, with the exception of Dylan Hendricks, who I think got nicked up, and we'll see what's going on there. But,
right.
like, your first-team All-Valley guys, or my first-team All-Valley guys, the dudes, the guys with the PFF grades in the 90s, your absolute, like, All-America-level talents, killed it in Verm.
Yes, and well, it's been through the playoff run as well. Like, we saw Tamarik Williams step back up in a big way against Montana State.
Yeah.
It's the guys that you expect the big performances from, or
yep.
you're getting the big performances from. And Cole, he's kind of a fresher face in that, because we expected good things from him this year, but it's his first year at safety still.
Right.
And for him to have eight
first
interceptions
team AP
this year.
All-America.
Right, and a first-team All-American in his first – I can't emphasize enough how impressive. I know I say after every show I do, or during every show I do where I talk about him, like, by the way, that's his first year of safety.
Yeah.
I can't put into words how impressive that is to do that at that position at the Division One level
yes.
for the very first time.
Yep.
So very impressed by Cole this year.
And, you know, I think with Ticketgate, right? And and so you had reason for NDSU fans to be mad. And there was a very real, we talked to Jay Elson about this. There was a very real nobody believes in us vibe.
Yes.
For USD.
Yep.
And I get it, right? From them, you're thinking, we beat NDSU's ass in their house on homecoming.
A win they waited a very long time
and
for. That was a signature win for
them. And we earned, SDSU blew our doors off, but they beat everyone.
Right.
So if I'm USD, I'm thinking, we flipping earned the number three seed, and nobody gives us a chance. Now, unfortunately, nobody should have given them
a chance. That was proven correct. But I get why they would feel they should have had that chip on the shoulder.
Yes, and I think a huge factor of what NDSU did was just they took the air out of the building. And I wasn't down there; you were. But man, even at halftime, people left.
Right,
people were just done.
They'd seen this movie before.
Right,
they knew what this was, and it was the exact opposite of what USD was able to do when they came into the Fargo Dome on September 30th. They came out and punched NDSU in the mouth back in the Fargo Dome.
They created a quiet crowd.
Exactly.
Yeah,
and they got off to a 21-3 run, and then that was all they had to do. They ended up winning by I think like six. It didn't feel that close, of course, at the end. But USD got off to an early start and ran that all the way through. NDSU got out to a 28-3 start in the first half, so they just one-upped USD there and then rode that out for the playoff win.
Yep.
So it was the exact flipped script of what we saw in the regular season and probably an absolute nightmare for USD fans.
Okay, offensively, one of the things that really impressed me was tendency breakers. I think folks, and we're going to talk about Mr. Roll, I promise, but folks have discussed, hey, every time Cam is, or every time Cole's in the game, it's a run and it's a run left.
Right.
Okay. Okay.
Now stop it.
Fair enough. A, it's been a lot more successful than you get credit for, because when he scores, nobody says anything. But when it gets stuffed on third and one, it's the only thing anyone can talk about.
Yep. Yep.
If you actually look at the numbers, even Cole running left is a highly successful play. Right. But we won't, not the point I'm trying to make.
Uh-huh.
The point I'm trying to make is, and this is really a systematic structure thing for NDSU, both football and men's basketball.
Okay.
They are literally designed and coached to peak for football now and for men's basketball in March. And that's why Richmond has such a banana land winning percentage at the Summit League tournament.
Yep.
It's why Matt and Chris and Craig have this ridiculous winning percentage in the FCS playoffs. They are built structurally to be better at the end of the season than any other team. And by the way, that also has some strategy to it, meaning we might show you Cole Payton left 100 times so that when we go Cole Payton right, you ain't ready. And boy, did they. They threw eye candy out to the left with Raja.
Yep.
SDSU had three linebackers. Two of them went with Raja, and all of a sudden now you're outnumbered, and you've got a pulling Brandon Westberg one-on-one with a safety. And you go and watch my film review piece that I put out yesterday, you can see what happens to that safety. And you just get outnumbered when the play calls are that good. And that play call was that good because you go Cole left, Cole left, Cole left, and the second you go fake Cole left, Cole right, which by the way is not the name of the play, but it's what
I like to imagine it is. I like
it's what we'll use. I just thought there was some stuff that NDSU did that worked off of stuff that they've shown on film, and it was brilliant. I mean, they could have named their score. They really could have named their score.
And with the offense does, you mentioned it. Again, this isn't going to be my point, but I'm going to mention it. It comes under attack for being predictable, things like that.
Right.
Like, you're just running quarterback power. The intricacies behind it with the guys that go in motion, it's all methodical. The guys who pull, who they set out, how many times did we see Cam line up in the backfield and they never did anything with it until all of a sudden the trick plays start happening where it's Cole taking the snap, hand off to Cam, throw the wheel route type thing. So there's these intricacies that they do build in there.
I know.
It's not just a quarterback power to the left.
My grandma, God rest her soul, she's no longer with us. She'd sit up in our section, and if we weren't scoring, she would just occasionally shout, or Grandma Joanne, she was up the middle, up the middle, up the middle. And I wanted to correct her and kind of say, okay, but they're running duo, and then they're running power, and then they're running
right.
There are eight different ways that NDSU runs, quote unquote, up the middle. Exactly. And I don't think the average fan always necessarily understands that.
No. Which is fine.
Right.
My dad was a coach. I grew up with football. I played and coached. I watch for all of these little intricacies. I love them.
Yeah.
If I was just watching on Saturdays and Sundays, I probably wouldn't dive into it that much. But it's my job.
And we're
now.
Not making fun. No, we're not making fun. Obviously, an impressive win considering what was going on behind the scenes.
Apparently,
You know, Matt said that his wife gave some of the players a little extra long hugs, and people started to wonder.
It was a dead giveaway, apparently.
You know, what was going on. But obviously, Larson knew. Yeah. Ants knew.
Yep.
And for them, A, to keep it quiet, and B, to still put in the amount of preparation that it is absolutely clear got put into that win.
Right.
Impressive all around.
Very. And I've seen those situations handled a lot less smoothly
at
different levels in different areas. But like you mentioned, the expertly executed game plan against USD, a team that they had to beat, like a team that handed them their first loss of the year, the team that was standing in the way of you getting back to Frisco, and they did it with all the background drama. So very impressive.
And one more minor thing, and I'll just do this one. Valuable to get snaps off the starters. It was valuable to win a game by that much. And we looked at this. They've played 11 straight weeks of football. And so that's key not just to developing depth, but when you have played for 11 straight weeks, and frankly, they're not doing what they've done a ton in the past, which is rotating an offensive lineman.
Right.
You've got Westy playing every snap. And you've got Sundell playing almost every snap, and Kubis playing every snap. You start getting 63, 64, 67, 68 snaps every single week on these big guys.
Yeah.
It was important for them to be able to rotate guys in, important for them to keep the D-line fresh, important for them to get those linebackers off the field, give 14 snaps to a Nathaniel Stalen, get Marcus Gully in the game,
right,
continue rotating Oscar and Julian, and just you got to save up legs because you beat Montana, you get your break.
Yes.
You get your respite. You get, you know.
You earn your weeks off.
Yeah.
You just have to win another playoff game.
Right. You got to do it one more time, 11 weeks in a row. It was important, I think, that game, or not necessarily important, it was very beneficial that game was not a knockdown, drag out,
right,
whatever. It's helpful that, and Montana's was.
Yes.
Montana's was.
So. Right.
And so, yes.
If they had 2 1-point Montana State games in a row, it'd be in a lot worse situation. Exactly. And you mentioned, just to touch on the offensive line, you mentioned them. It's an active offensive line, too. It's not they're setting up in pass pro every play.
No,
so,
no.
I mean, they needed to get off their feet for a little while.
Yeah. Okay. Next head coach at North Dakota State. I have an opinion.
Uh-huh.
I've been criticized for even having an opinion.
Yeah, you're not allowed to have that.
And I get it, right? Like, I quote-unquote covered the team. Mm-hmm. You know, we do things a little bit differently. Like, Devin, we've talked. Nobody wonders who I want to win. Because we've talked about, like, you go to journalism school, you do things like being impartial, unbiased.
Yes.
No cheering in the press box. And I don't.
Unless you see, I remember one time we watched Cody Mauch flip and like do a somersault and throw up a first down,
react
and then everybody cheered
in the press box. But nobody wonders who I want to win.
Right.
Okay. Nobody wonders who Zach wants to win.
Right.
Nobody wonders who Nate Zastrow wants to win when they play men's basketball. Nobody wonders these things. My opinion has never changed. It has never changed since the day they named Matt the guy and they promoted Tyler to offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I have thought this will be a 4 or 5 year run for Mr. Ence, and then Tyler will be the next head football coach. And I get it. I understand. And it's funny because two of the top other candidates are also offensive coordinators that people used to yell about.
Right. Yeah.
And everybody yells about the offensive coordinator. And my short answer to people that ask is, you know, okay, what's your biggest problem with Coach Roll? Play calling. Okay. What's he not going to do? what has even defensive coaches, they don't call plays. Ince doesn't call the defense.
Right.
Chris didn't call the defense. Bowl didn't call the defense.
Correct. That is something I had an argument in the newsroom yesterday. I'm so glad you brought this up. He would have so many less responsibilities as a head coach. You mentioned he wouldn't be calling the plays.
Right.
And so, like, if that's your biggest thing.
Not necessarily fewer responsibilities, but.
Right. I just mean, like, for play calling.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He'll have the headset on.
Right.
He'll probably have veto power,
yes.
You know, whatever. But it's going to be probably Coach Hedberg, not necessarily as OC, but Coach Hedberg's already in those communications on the headset.
Right.
And whatever. You promote from within. Give my boy Noah Pauley a call about maybe coming back.
There you go.
My boy Connor Sanger down with the Arizona Cardinals, former offensive quality control. Now, he's had 2 years NFL experience. Maybe give up. Now I'm really.
Yeah, you're going in the weeds here.
You're getting the staff filled out. But you're not going to match his energy. You're not going to match his Bison pride because it can't be matched.
Right.
You're not going to match his understanding of the expectations here. And that's something that Matt Larson said in his side session on Monday. Mm-hmm. You need to be ready to go 11-3 and for people to want you fired at 11-3.
Yes. He said your first loss, people are going to call for your job.
Yes.
And that doesn't happen at very many other programs.
Exactly. But you know who understands that completely? Tyler Rohl.
Right.
He completely gets it and hopefully has thick enough skin, and I think does have thick enough skin. But the number one reason that I'm pushing for this and have always pushed for this is look at the players.
Yes. Yeah. That, we saw that huge yesterday.
And I remember, Twitter was around when Bowl left. Mm-hmm. Not in a huge way, but it was around.
Yeah.
Nobody really openly campaigned for Chris. I know behind closed doors, people said, like, Kleiman's the guy.
Right, right.
Cool. 2018, I said on Twitter, hire Coach Ants. It's the mm-hmm. thing. Just hire Matt. That's the thing to do. I didn't see a ton of players come out. I'm sure behind closed doors, again, the defensive guys especially were like, yeah, Chris is leaving. Matt should be the guy.
Yeah.
And then he was. Yesterday, it was a lot of hashtag Rohl heard.
Rohl heard. Yeah.
Tyler needs to be the guy. Tyler's already the guy. Tyler is Bison football. Tyler is Bison pride. And then it got even to the point of, and this is stuff we've confirmed, there are guys basically saying, like, hey, the portal exists.
Yeah.
And I'm probably out of here if you pass Tyler over for this spot, which.
Right.
And I will understand the side of it was like, well, that's kind of a temper tantrum.
A little bit.
That's childish to say if I don't get what I want, I'm leaving. But is there right? It's their opportunity. It's how the portal works.
That's where we're at now. And,
right.
And that's not an exclusive to NDSU thing. Look at how many coaching JMU, perfect example. Coach leaves. Half their offense hits the portal.
Yep.
When a coach leaves, there's been a mass exodus just from what we've seen this year.
Yeah.
At least in the portal era, when a coach leaves, that's the guy that recruited him. Half the time they follow him to where he's going. But it's...
Even with Cignetti. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure the JMU guys were thinking, yeah, this Holy Cross coach might be a great dude. We don't care.
I don't know that guy.
I don't know him.
Yeah.
Yep. And even though, you know, both Brent Vegan and Tim Polasek, I shouldn't say both because it's three guys we'll talk about, but Brent Vegan, Tim Polasek, Jamar Cain all have deep NDSU ties. These guys don't know them.
Right. No, they don't. And that's, I went through this in college. My coach left 2 weeks before training camp started, so that's a whole other ballgame. And he just left. But I've been through this. It's scary. When we had to bring a guy in from California, he was living, or Oregon, one of those two. This guy moved across the country to, like, lead our team 2 weeks up before training camp. It was a scary situation. I didn't know this guy. I had just been working with those coaches all summer and had been working with them to just get familiar with them, get familiar with what they like, let them know who I am. This coach is coming in. If a new guy comes in, he doesn't know who these guys are. They don't know who he is. There's comfort in familiarity.
Yeah.
And college players want that right now.
I see what's happening, right? I get, don't just hire Tyler because the players are holding you hostage.
Exactly.
don't hire Tyler because the automatically, because you've hired internally the last two times and it's worked, there's no guarantee it'll work this time.
Correct.
I get all of that. I do. Hire Tyler. I want Coach Roll to be the coach. I think the best thing for NDSU is for Coach Roll to be the coach because that's what I actually believe.
Right. This isn't you being a homer for somebody you like. This is you thinking about what's best for the program.
He is a leader of men that obviously has inspired very fierce loyalty. He understands football. People don't know, and they might think this is dumb, but he was a defensive coordinator at Morehead High.
Yep.
He's coached defense. He's coached a different style of ball in that he ran some of the flex bone stuff when he was at Concordia.
Yep.
Obviously has an unbelievably deep understanding of what NDSU wants to do offensively. And no, he doesn't have FBS experience. No, he doesn't have a ton of experience at a place that isn't Fargo-Moorhead. I don't care. Coaching's coaching. When Kansas State hired Chris Kleiman had worked at UNI, Loris, and NDSU.
Right.
No FBS experience. Can't recruit Texas. Can't win in the big. Hire people. Right. Hire people with connections. Hire people that understand the portal. Hire people that understand NIL if that's something that you don't think Tyler Roll can do. The man at the head of the room, the man leading the team out of the tunnel, to me, that's Tyler Roll.
And, you know, you mentioned hiring people. That's something I saw people pointing out for why it shouldn't be him. It's because he doesn't have the connections because he's been here. It is 2023.
Dude.
All of these coaches talk to each other. Everybody knows somebody.
Matt Entz has never met Lincoln Riley a day in his life.
Exactly.
And Lincoln just changed Matt Entz's life based on probably the recommendation of somebody. Like,
right.
It just doesn't matter anymore.
They're not going through a Rolodex of coaches back in their office. Like they know each other.
Yeah.
We're in a very small world right now. Everybody knows everybody.
Okay. Why this needs to get done sooner rather than later. I would expect and hope for an announcement prior to the Montana game.
Yes.
I think that removes a distraction.
Hopefully not Friday because I'll be driving to Missoula. So tomorrow would be great. Anyway, go on.
Yeah. And right now, I think they're in an impossible. I think, honestly, I do think, for better or for worse, I kind of feel like Matt Larson's been painted into a corner. I think there's a hornet's nest that's going to get kicked if it's not Roll.
But also, if it is Roll, like he's going to be facing, you know, on one hand, if he doesn't hire him, there's the prospect that a bunch of players could leave, which is obviously a massive deal.
The other thing is, it could just take the air out of the balloon going into
Montana. Absolutely, absolutely. And then if you do name him, all these people that we've seen have very strong opinions, and they're the ones that do donate to the team and hopefully to the collective.
I get that. I understand that. What I will say is, and I've seen the idea of don't give in to the players.
Right.
Okay, fine. That's your opinion. Fine. Don't give in to the players. Just wait until the end of the season to make the announcement. I don't think you can do that.
Not in this situation.
You have 3 weeks potentially after a potential win on Saturday to get ready for a national championship game. Probably going to be against South Dakota State.
Yes.
You're in a situation where you have National Signing Day a week from today.
That's the biggest thing.
You've lost two commitments. That would have happened either way. I really believe so. You have your in-town or in-state Power Four primary university, which all respect to KU and to Iowa State. Those are K-State football states and Iowa Hawkeye football states.
Yes.
You have that university come in and say, we have found a way to pay for your school. That's a tough ask. I think you're going to lose Kyan Payne. I think you're going to lose Kyler Girardi. Matt Entz is the head coach. Tyler Roll is the head coach, whatever. Here's what you can't do right now, though, unfortunately. Who at NDSU has the authority to even offer a scholarship?
Right, exactly.
Who is guaranteed to still be on staff?
Nobody.
Even Randy.
Right, yeah, we have no idea.
If they hire Tim Polasek tomorrow, what's the guarantee that Tim Polasek wants Randy in there?
Right, there isn't one. There isn't one.
And so I think they need to make a choice quickly. So that somebody has the authority after they lose who they may or may not lose to the portal, after they lose who they may or may not lose to just being cherry-picked into someone else's signing day class.
Right.
If you have five scholarships, that let's say you lose two more kids and you lose three in the portal. That's five scholarships you now have, and you need somebody with the authority to make scholarship offers.
Right. And if I'm a kid about to make the toughest choice in my life where I'm going to go spend the next 4 years.
I need to know the coaches.
I would love to know who I'm playing for. Exactly.
Yes, exactly.
And so, yeah, no, they definitely – and Larson mentioned in his little presser on Monday that they want to get it done sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And mentioned signing day as a big factor for why they want to get that done sooner. So I would imagine they have something done by at least signing day. And you mentioned – as soon as this
week.
I
would get it done before Saturday.
Yes.
Why does it seem like Brent Vegan's not involved? That to a lot of people, that seemed like a layup.
Yeah.
By the way, from everything that I've heard, and this is somewhat sourced information, he's not involved.
Interesting. Because like that's the name that keeps coming up. Like whenever anyone is asked their opinion on who they would want to be the next head coach, that's somebody that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
But if he's not like actually actively involved in the process, then what are we doing here?
And I don't know if it's he doesn't see himself working for Matt Larson. I don't know if it's, you know what, I got a pretty sweet gig right now in Bozeman, but he's from Buxton.
Right.
Like, and it's $100,000 raise to come here.
Makes sense.
Played here. GA'd here, won titles here.
There is a commitment to the Montana State level.
Yeah,
that I'm sure that comes into it. I'm sure that comes into play of
unaccomplished goals.
Right. They have a good roster even moving forward.
Bozeman's a sweet place.
I loved Bozeman. I was very shocked by how much I loved Bozeman.
Yeah, Bozeman's a sweet place.
So I mean, I obviously love Fargo more. Sure. Wanted to get that out.
Yeah.
There. I think it might just be he's comfortable where he's at. He has a good roster. They have national championship hopes every year. They tend to get dashed, but he has the hopes every year.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, just moving forward, if you want to, you know, commit to these guys and the guys have committed to you, that might just be the biggest factor.
Now, on the experience side, so Tim Polasek is the other key candidate. Another guy, which is funny to me just because – fans were really tough on him when he called the plays.
It's funny how that works.
Yeah. They didn't like all the jet sweeps. He had good players to run jet sweeps with. But anyway.
Just running up the middle. What are you doing?
I know. Anyway.
Pound the rock.
Has the things that people that are looking for a little bit of a freshness or a little bit of a change, worried maybe about some stagnation in NDSU football right now. He brings FBS Power Four. It's weird. I can't even say Power Four, but it is.
Yeah, it is at this point.
Rest in peace. Rest in peace to the Pac-12.
Pour one out for the Pac-12.
You know, being under Kirk Ferentz for 4 years is value. Being a G5 offensive coordinator has value. He's actually worked in two different G5 conferences, having been at Northern Illinois in the MAC,
yep,
and having been at Wyoming in the Mountain West. He's worked, as we said, in the Big Ten. If you're worried about coaching connections, which I actually think is BS, like I agree. Out on the idea of that. But if you think that matters, he has a bigger network than Roll. I don't think that's debatable.
He does have that Rolodex in his office.
He's older. I mean, he has more of the actual life experience, more coaching experience, as it were. He's been other places. You know, he's been at Wyoming. He's been at NIU. He's been at Iowa. Tyler's been here, Concordia, and Moorhead High.
Right.
I do get that as a criticism. Concerns for Tim, for me, he's kind of a red line guy.
Yeah.
Energy level's high.
Ah.
Might need like some even-keeled coordinators to sort of level him off. He's the anti-Kleiman. Kleiman needed to bring like Ben Newman in to jazz everybody up because Kleiman is more of a, I love you and I'm really, really smart, but I'm not going to make you run through a brick wall. Tim's going to have everyone running through brick walls. And honestly, Roll is sort of like that.
Right, right.
But Polasek's a fiery guy. And I'm not saying you can't have a fiery head coach. Sometimes it's hard to be turned up to 11 365 days a year.
Yes.
All of that said, and obviously Roll doesn't have head coaching experience either, but Tim, to my knowledge, has also never been a head coach, which at his age or his advanced level of experience, it would be helpful. Again, I hand up. I understand, neither does Tyler. But at no point was there even like, well, Tim spent 5 years as a D2 head coach in Kansas, or did
right.
There's nothing there.
Which with somebody with that experience, that's kind of what you would.
It's kind of
for.
Odd. Yeah, it's kind of odd. But I will just say, and I've said this before, my pick for NDSU's coach is Tyler Rohl.
Right.
I'd have absolutely no problem with a Tim Polasek hire. That was before the players did what they did.
Yes.
And not to say that I would have a problem with a Tim Polasek hire, but your soldiers have told you who their general is. Right. And that, I think, is that is a drawback from Polasek, is like, your guys have told you who their leader is.
And whether it's Polasek or anybody else, you have to be prepared for that.
Right.
You're like, if it's anybody but Rohl, you just have to be prepared for what the players are going to do at that point, which is possibly take advantage of the power that they have now through the NCAA.
And the final guy, and he's kind of a wild card, is Jamar Cain. Jamar, to his credit, and I love Jamar, and I'm not necessarily even going to say mean things about Jamar, but just like, he's great. I've had beers with him down in Frisco, which is funny because he has made so many different high major stops here, there, and he could not care. He could not come back to Frisco.
Uh-huh.
When he shows up in Frisco, he could wear his LSU gear or his Oklahoma gear or his Fresno State gear or
wherever,
like,
it may be.
Whatever it may be, he could act like he's the guy.
Yeah.
He doesn't act like that.
Nice.
He has a couple drinks with everybody. Doesn't get sloppy, but I mean, just like, he acts like one of the guys. He acts like a program supporter, okay? And I think that's really cool for a guy that did not spend that much time here to really feel that pull to Fargo. That's pretty cool. Now with the Denver Broncos, I think people think he could be a fresh face. People think he might have a really good grasp on the NIL side. People might think he'll be a great recruiter, which he is.
Yes.
He is a great recruiter.
That much I've heard for sure.
I think people think he could do a good job in the NIL space, being creative not only in how to utilize it, but really being creative and getting out in the community and raising awareness. Now, coaches, it's a fine line there, right?
Yeah, you don't want
to. They need to be separated, but Jamar, in people's minds, could be the kind of guy that can drum up more interest in a program that, I mean, we've seen the declining attendance.
Yes.
We've seen
40% attendance at their only home playoff game this year.
Right.
Like, it's a factor.
And I think, too, you start to talk about, the weaponization of NIL to raid your signing day class and give them PWO. Like, we are getting further and further away from any idea that FCS football is the long-term home of North Dakota State football. So do you think it's likely that Jamar Cain is maybe your best guy to move you into the next stage of things? I can maybe buy that. Here's what I don't buy. And again, all due respect to Jamar. Jamar's not from here. I have no reason to believe that Jamar would not do a phenomenal job here for 3 years and take the next opportunity.
Right.
And again, it's no disrespect for Jamar. I am all for people bettering themselves.
By all means, yeah. We've celebrated the Ents move to SoCal, like, very much so.
Right.
and
that's all cool. But if I am running the athletic department,
right,
I'm not necessarily looking for that. You can just read Jamar's last, how long? Okay. Takes the Wyoming defensive line job in 13.
Yep.
Immediately leaves for the NDSU defensive line job in 14. Then in 17 goes to Fresno State. Then in 19 goes to Arizona State. Then in 20 goes to Oklahoma. Then follows Lincoln Riley to USC and then goes, just kidding, and leaves in the offseason without ever actually coaching USC for LSU. And then after 1 year, leaves LSU for the Denver Broncos. What I see in Jamar Cain, and I have no problem with this, is a guy trying to move up the ladder.
Yes.
And good for you, but if I'm Matt Larson, if I'm running NDSU Athletics, I am not interested in you using us to be a quick rung on your ladder. I need a long-term vision. I need a long-term commitment, much like the 4 years you got from Klieman and the 5 years you got from Entz.
Right.
That's what I need.
And Larson mentioned that as well. That's something he doesn't want, is somebody to come in. The exact word he used was transactional. He doesn't want anybody to use NDSU to pad their resume and then move on, which absolutely makes total sense. Like we both have said, would be thrilled for anybody who sees this as an opportunity to further their career. However, that's not what the athletic department is looking for.
Yeah.
They're looking for somebody who's looking for they want this to be their dream job.
Yeah.
And this to be mission accomplished right here. And so I do think, especially the experience factor with Jamar Cain, you know, and with the NIL stuff, he's seen it in action in way bigger markets, places that have, are really far beyond in like this established NIL, these established collectives. He would know more about that aspect of the game, and especially with the recruiting aspect as well, that would be huge. But like you said, it really comes down to what does he want to do with an FCS head coaching job?
Okay, I'm gonna wrap this up, or we're gonna kind of wrap this up.
Okay.
I've had four different people, and I've talked to like, it feels like 100 people about it, but I've had four different people talk to me about, well, Bowl wasn't an internal hire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, okay.
Right.
NDSU was also in a terrible position at that time.
They didn't want anybody from the internal teams.
Right.
Right.
And then some other stuff about like, well, Polisek's learned from Bowl. You know, Tyler just learned from Kleiman and Entz. And it's like,
only those two national championship winning coaches.
And not only that, but can we just acknowledge the absolute fact, all credit to Joe Chapman, Gene Taylor, and Craig Bowl for rolling this thing down the hill.
Rolling. I see what you did there.
Chris Kleiman is a Big 12 champion.
Yes.
Craig Bowl is 60-60 at Wyoming.
Right.
Their coaching accomplishments are not in the same,
not the same
bucket.
No.
I'm sorry. Like, if you're going to go after, you know, kind of, if there's a coach whose tree you want something from, or if there's a coach where you're like, no, that's the blueprint, it's Chris. It's not Craig.
Right.
And I'm not even talking junk about Entz at this time.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, the bowl worship is a little odd.
Yeah.
He didn't leave on the best of terms here either. He didn't do it in sort of the kind of classy manner that Matt and Chris have done it in.
Yeah.
I just feel like treating the bowl era is some magical renaissance, and then just saying, like, not admitting that there are also six other national titles not won by Craig Bowl. I just think that this whole thing is weird. I get maybe it's because he's retiring or whatever, but it's good that Tim has this other experience. It is. I think any learning under the Chris Kleiman tree is just as or more valuable than learning from Craig. I mean, like I said, Chris won the Big freaking 12.
Right.
Not the Duke's Mayo Bowl or whatever the coolest thing that Craig ever did at Wyoming was.
I think it's the Barstool Arizona Bowl. I think that's the big one.
Anyway, not even, because NDSU may very well be in that Wyoming level of football soon.
Yep.
But anyway, I wanted to get that off my chest. We paid respects to Coach Bowl when he announced his retirement, but now treating him like he's a deity and not a 500 coach, which is what he was at Wyoming, right, is...
I do think there is some nostalgia for, you know, the early goings of the dynasty here.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that that's a factor in it. Some rose colored glasses, you forget a bunch of stuff, but you know, at the same time, I get what you're saying.
Anyway, I'm over it. Okay. Thank you to Devin Fry for making the time. Thanks to our sponsors at Gateway Chevrolet. Thanks to you, wonderful people, for listening to this hour-plus-long show in which we did not even preview this weekend's upcoming game. Have a phenomenal week, everybody, and go Bison.